We are visiting with Gary Pomerantz at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, his brand new book, Their Life's Work, talking about the Pittsburgh Steelers. And what did you have to say and share about Chuck Knoll, his leadership style, and what he was able to accomplish?
Well, Chuck Knoll, you know, we remember Super Bowl III because of Joe Namath. He guaranteed the sports writers that the Jets would win, and they did. Uh-huh. And the team they beat was Don Shula's Baltimore Colts, 16-7 in Super Bowl III. Well, the defensive coach for Shula was a young assistant named Chuck Knoll, and Dan Rooney and his father, the chief, hired Knoll to be head coach in 1969. And in his first act as coach in the first round of the 1969 draft, only a day after his hiring, Chuck Knoll drafted Mean Joe Green from North Texas State. And all of a sudden, everything began to change. I mean, Joe Green was the foundational piece of this empire. And Chuck Knoll built this team in his image. And by that, I mean, he would tell his scouts, if you find a guy out there who's a great athlete, but maybe, you know, he needs to be a little bigger, we'll put him on weights and we'll make him bigger. And so in that 74 draft, for instance, Knoll would call it a draft of exceptions. By that, he meant Lynn Swann from USC was a little too short. And Jack Lambert from Kent State was a little bit too skinny at middle linebacker. And John Stallworth, well, he was kind of obscure. He was only playing in front of about 1,500 people per game at the historically black college, Alabama A&M. And Mike Webster, the center from Wisconsin, well, some people had him as the 9th or 11th best center in the draft. And he was kind of small, too. So Knoll remade the team, and he re-engineered his players, and it worked.
And speaking of drafts, I did not know this story about the Steelers. They nearly did not draft Franco Harris, but it was Art Rooney Jr. He was adamant and kind of what manipulated the process to make sure that they would secure him, correct?
Correct. And Chuck Knoll wasn't so sure about Franco Harris because, you know, Franco's personality seemed almost reticent. Joe Paterno, his college coach at Penn State, had Lydell Mitchell, who went into the NFL that year, and Franco Harris. And he used to say, if I put a brick wall in front of my two running backs, Lydell would run through it. And Franco would walk right up to that wall. He'd stand in front of it. He'd count the bricks, you know, and Paterno would start laughing. Franco was kind of ponderous. He thought things through. But Art Rooney was convinced that he saw glimmerings of greatness. And he even tape recorded some other scouts and assistant coaches who had watched Franco at Penn State, and he edited the tape, and he played it for Chuck Knoll and the other coaches. He was determined that Franco Harris would be a Steeler, and now he refers to Harris as being like our naval battle of the Midway, you know, for the United States. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, before Midway, the United States lost a lot of battles, but once they got, you know, through Midway, they won everything after that. And it was kind of that way for the Steelers once they got Franco Harris. Never had a losing season again.
Well, Franco Harris, you have to have a sincere appreciation for him because, like so many of the 1970 Steelers, he stayed in Pittsburgh after football to pursue his life's work. I mean, so philanthropic, and he has been such a big part of that city.
Well, you're right about that. And you know, many of the players from that day are still in Pittsburgh. They love the place. And Franco, when he came here, way back in 1972 as a rookie, he had decided that wherever he went, and he really wanted to go to a warm weather place. He's from New Jersey, and he thought it'd be fun to be in the sun somewhere in the South or maybe L.A.
Uh-huh.
But he decided wherever he went, he was going to get to know that city and become a part of that city. And so he has been involved in more philanthropic causes than just about anyone in this town, and he still is today. And, you know, when you go to the airport in Pittsburgh and you come in that terminal, there's two statues there staring at you, one of General George Washington and the other of Franco making the immaculate reception.
Just a few more minutes this weekend at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show with Gary Pomerantz, as we are doing a book review, and his is titled Their Life's Work, The Brotherhood of the 1970s, the Pittsburgh Steelers, Then and Now. And we have to ask you about what your book has to share about Terry Bradshaw, because he played 14 seasons with Pittsburgh, won 4 Super Bowls, and why is he still separated from his former teammates?
Well, it's a complicated story. You know, Terry Bradshaw was drafted first pick overall in the 1970 draft, and one scout said about him, this guy's like Xerox stock. Only one comes along every 20 years. Well, that sort of dates it, I suppose, talking about Xerox stock. But Bradshaw had all the physical gifts. He could throw deep. He was a tough guy. He was a good leader. But he came out of a small school, Louisiana Tech. and he struggled in his early years. And, you know, today when we think about Terry Bradshaw as a football player, we think, well, you know, Hall of Famer. He won 4 Super Bowls. He was the MVP of 2 of those Super Bowls. And he had a big-time arm throwing downfield, you know, through a pass that went for a touchdown to Lynn Swann in a Super Bowl, and it carried more than 70 yards. All of that true. But less well remembered now is how difficult it was for Terry in those first 5-6 years. And frankly, one of the revelations for me in doing the research of the book was to realize how hard Terry was hit. And by that, I don't really refer to opposing defenses, although some of them hit him hard too. I'm referring more to the media, locally in Pittsburgh and across the nation. All of them, you know, seeming to take into question his intellect. You know, they called him Little Abner and cleats and Huck Finn and shoulder pads. And they were always saying that he wasn't the brightest guy in the world. Thomas Hollywood Henderson said famously during a Super Bowl week, Dallas playing against the Steelers, you know, Terry Bradshaw couldn't spell cat if you spotted him, the C and the A. And it was, well, I suppose it was a good line and it was well delivered and there was a media hungry to accept it. And that was seared on Terry Bradshaw's brain, you know. It was seared into his name. And to his credit, since his football career, he's decided to play off of that and play that Southern good old boy who surprised us by saying almost anything. But also how hard he was hit by Chuck Knoll. Chuck Knoll, frankly, didn't do a very good job managing what is the most important relationship a football coach has with his quarterback. And, you know, there's a great story about Bart Starr in his second year with Green Bay through an interception at practice. Lombardi unloaded on him. And after practice, Starr goes into Lombardi's office, closes the door, and says, "Coach, I need to talk to you. Please don't ever do that again. If you want me to lead this team, you can't unload on me like that in front of the guys. Do it here in your office." And as Starr tells the story, you know, Lombardi listened and said, "I understand." And their relationship took off from that point, and so too did the fortunes of the Green Bay Packers. I asked Terry, I said, you know, I told him about that. I said, "Would you have ever done something like that? Why didn't you?" He said, "You just didn't do stuff like that with Chuck Knoll. His door was open, but, you know, players would tell you that Chuck Knoll's personality was closed. He wasn't that kind of a guy." And Terry said also, "I just didn't have the self-confidence or the courage then. You know, there was a time when I hated Chuck Knoll, but as I look back now, I see that he made me a man." Well, I can tell you, Franco Harris has been trying to bring Terry back into the fold for a long time. You know, Terry still remembers that time in 1973 where he was hit hard, hurt his shoulder, and got up from the turf at Three River Stadium. The crowd, the home crowd, cheered. And Franco and the other guys want to bring him back, and they're still trying.
I was going to say Franco, but he has like a dinner every year, and he's worked really, really hard to try to bring him back and to be embraced by his former teammates, but that just has not happened, and not the closeness with the organization that he would like. Again, the title of the book is Their Life's Work, The Brotherhood of the 1970s, the Pittsburgh Steelers, Then and Now. And Gary, where can all of our listeners go to get a copy of it?
Well, the book is available, as they say, at all the usual spots online, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and also certainly bookstores. The book just was published yesterday.
Well, congratulations on the book, and we look forward to catching up with you again real soon. Thank you so much, Gary.
Thanks so much. I enjoyed it.
Stick around. We've got much more straight ahead this weekend at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, and join us online at eradiosports.com. We will be right back.